Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
If I'm Dave Nonis and Brendan Shanahan, I just want to quietly go about my business, even though it's Toronto. Does anybody ever hear anything about Montreal's dealings? Never. Nothing. And then they just make a trade. That's how I would like to do business.
My mother's at home up in Baltimore, and my daddy's down in the ground. It gets awfully cold.
Welcome back. That was Ray Ferraro. His old hockey home, Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, for the final time. Ray Ferraro will be telling some war stories tonight on TSN at that game between the Maple Leafs and the Islanders, talking specifically about the piece in the Globe and Mail today on Brendan Shanahan having full support of ownership. He's going to tear everything down and start all over again. And it doesn't matter how long it's going to take. They're going to do this the right way. And Ray is wondering why that's in the paper, among other things. And by the way, we do get news occasionally of the Montreal Canadiens about to make a trade. Here he is from ESPN.com and TSN Hockey Insider. Pierre Lebrun, how are you?
I'm all right.
Yes, sir. So tell us, the Canadiens are going to make a trade. Tell us.
I suspect they will before the deadline comes and passes on March 2nd. Yes, my friend, I suspect they will. You know, the sense I get from talking to other people around the league is that Mark Bergevin is more focused on a hockey deal than he is on a rental deal. Trying to get someone in that can be part of this team past this year. Now, I think he had the same focus a year ago, to be honest, and ended up the Vanek thing kind of, as you know, Mitch, kind of fell in his lap. He wasn't really aiming for Thomas Vanek, but the price was so low that, you know, he went for it at the 11th hour. So that could still happen, too, where he ends up with the rental, not because that was his initial priority or initial plan, but because it ends up making the most sense, because it is harder to make a hockey deal this time of year. But the other thing I would tell you, and I think I've shared this before to you and your listeners, but I tell you what, I'm not sure if there's a GM making more phone calls right now than him. Now, again, that's not because there's something imminent. I mean, there could be, but I think the sense I get is just, you know, the level of research that he's putting in. And so that when you're making an 11th hour decision, you know exactly, after having talked to that team a couple of times over the last few weeks, what you need to offer and who's available, et cetera. So very active in terms of doing his homework.
Yeah, he's doing his job. And I guess when you played as long in the NHL as Mark Bergevin did, 20 years, you get to know a lot of people around the NHL. So he actually has the ability to make a lot of phone calls to a lot of people he knows.
Well, it's funny you say that, because everyone took or tweeted, or someone took a picture of Bergeron today sitting in the stands at the Oilers skate at the Bell Center with Craig McTavish. And it just so happens I was chatting with Matt T a couple of hours ago, and he goes, yeah. He goes, we were teammates. We're talking about the old days. I mean, Mark Bergeron's played with almost everyone, right? And a lot of them are running teams now. He does have those great relationships my guess is he knows a guy in almost every front office that he's right. Either played with or against, or just knows through his scouting days with the Blackhawks, and that's a good thing to have those, you know, that level of networking available to you.
So with so much focus on impending free agents like Antoine Vermette and Jágr and several others, you seem to be suggesting that maybe, as a fan, as you're trying to figure out what Bergevin might do prior to the deadline, is look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Would elsewhere be somebody like Ryan O'Reilly, for example?
Well, I mean, that would be an example. I have zero intel that Montreal and Colorado has talked, but if you're saying let's give an example, I mean, I guess that would be an example. I will tell you this: I think that in a perfect world, I think, again, judging from talking to other teams and them talking to Bergevin, I think that Montreal's looking to add both a piece up front and on defense if they can get it done between now and March 2nd. But again, I want to stress this. Even though the plan A is to try and make a hockey deal, it's hard to do that. And I think that at the end of the day, if there's a rental that makes sense, I don't think they're completely against it. It's just that they'd rather not do that.
Right. Now, Rod threw a name out at Ray a couple of hours ago, kind of caught everybody here a little off guard. I'm just curious why you arrived at that name, and if you want to throw it out at Pierre, go ahead.
Yeah, sure, Pierre. I'm curious. Canadians, I think they need some secondary scoring. I think they need some help on the right side of the forward group. I'd love to see them add someone who could play on the top two lines, and ideally someone with playoff experience. And I'm looking at the vultures circling over the Leafs' carcass, and I'm wondering if Joffrey Leupel, if I don't think there would be much demanded for in return for Joffrey Leupel. I'm wondering if you think he can stay healthy. I'm wondering if you think he can help a playoff run this year and beyond, because he does have three more years left on a salary cap hit of about $5
million. Yeah, I think that contract would be too scary, is my sense. I could be wrong. And certainly when he does stay healthy, he can get on some pretty impressive runs. I mean, Joffrey Leupel plays some pretty good hockey here in Toronto, but always injured. And the cap number and the contract itself, I know, scares a lot of teams. I don't sense a lot of traction on him right now.
And as far as vultures circling a certain team, how about in Arizona? I think we've spoken to you about the Coyotes a couple times, but I'm just wondering if the Coyotes, if their asking price on certain players are a bit too high, and if you think by the deadline they will get what they want, or they're going to have to bring those demands down.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the sense I get from talking to other teams, that the asking price on Vermette has been very high. And I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it's the same thing with the Leafs starting off pretty high on Franzen and Santarelli and Winnick. I mean, they're asking for a second for each of Santarelli and Winnick. And I think, like, one team in particular, I believe Vancouver, certainly balked at a second for Santarelli. The Canucks would love to get Santarelli back, but not at that price. But I think Arizona and Toronto are both in the same position. There are way fewer sellers than there are buyers, and it's not March 2nd. I mean, so what's the hurry? Now, I guess this is the eternal debate that we have every year at this time. If you know you're training someone, you better not go out tonight on the ice. The Leafs are in Long Island. I don't know who Arizona's playing. And have that guy you're trying to trade get hurt. That's the worst-case scenario, is that you waited too long and let the guy get injured in a game, and now you can't move a guy who's going to walk away July 1st.
Well, Martin Hanzel, for example.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know how much they really would want him to move. He's got a couple more years on his deal, and he's a big part of the heart and soul there. But, I mean, that's the danger at this time of year. And there is, you know, so much interest in Antoine Vermette in particular. The guy can do it all. And some pretty sizable interest in Toronto with Santarelli and Winnick, not just because they've had pretty solid years on a bad team, but because of their cap hits. They're both making very small salaries by NHL standards, and so many of the contenders are at the cap. And that's why you got teams like Pittsburgh, Boston, Vancouver, Nashville, the Rangers, all interested in a guy like Santarelli or Winnick, because they can absorb them more easily than some of the other guys that are available.
Yeah, I mentioned Hanzel just in case our listeners weren't aware that he suffered a significant injury and is probably done. With Pierre LeBrun every Tuesday and Thursday after 6, it's the pregame Irish Embassy portion of Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, once again, Mitch.
Yeah, we've also seen just a couple of first-rounders move. One moved in that Buffalo-Winnipeg deal yesterday. We also saw a first-rounder move in the David Perron deal with the Pittsburgh Penguins. We keep hearing, Pierre, about how deep this draft is going to be, one of the best drafts in 10, 11 years. Do you think teams are going to be more hesitant at deadline to give away those first-round picks, even if they think they can win the Cup?
I'd be really surprised if another one moved. I really would. In fact, I mean, I was talking to Chuck Fletcher of the Minnesota Wild today. I mean, the Wild have some pretty significant injuries now piling up front. Jason Zucker, who quietly was really having his best year of his career, he was playing top 6 minutes. He's out for the year now, and they've lost Mac Cook and Ryan Carter until mid-March. But the thing with Minnesota is they've traded away so many picks and prospects the last couple of years that Chuck Fletcher's really gun-shy now about trading, in particular, his second-round pick. He doesn't have a second-round pick next year. He already traded that one for Matt Molson last year. So, I mean, and it's interesting because, now he wouldn't talk about this, but I found out through other people, I mean, that's why he ended up really trading for Dubnyk over Enroth last month, because Buffalo wanted a second, and Arizona settled for a third. And so he went for the goalie that he could get without having to spend his second-round pick. So never mind the fact that I think first-round picks are going to be protected like gold. because of the quality of the draft. Not just that, guys. You're seeing fewer and fewer first-round picks get dealt in the last couple of years. Anyway, we've had this conversation. But now even the second-round picks for certain teams are going to be, you know, if you're going to deal them, it's because you're getting something pretty good in return. And that's why I think the Bruins are in a pretty good spot. They have 2 second-rounders this year and 2 second-rounders next year. Of course, they got one in two of them in the Boychuk deal. So they're going to use one of those for sure and get themselves, you know, either a winger or a defenseman. And the Bruins will be active between now and March 2nd for sure.
You know, nowadays with social media, everyone's got their phones out on, you know, getting the Twitter updates. And I myself do not have Twitter. Unfortunately, I might have to look into that. It seems like I'm behind the boat right now.
That is Drew Stafford, newest member of the Winnipeg Jets, with them in Nashville. So here's our first opportunity to talk to you about the mega deal that went down. And fortunately, we had your quotes of Evander Kane just before we left the air last night, in the last few minutes of the show, some in-depth quotes from Evander Kane to Pierre LeBrun. But it's one thing to read quotes, another thing to actually talk to the guy and hear his mm-hmm. voice. So for those who are playing catch-up today, how did he sound to you last night?
Well, I mean, incredibly happy to, and I may be even surprised that his situation got resolved so quickly. I mean, I think if there's one thing that Evander Kane and the Jets could agree on is that him staying there wasn't a good thing. So really happy, and even though Buffalo obviously wasn't his top choice, we all know that he would have loved to have gone to the Vancouver Canucks, but he's excited after talking to Tim Murray about, hey, you know, they draft McDavid or Eichel and they got Sam Reinhart coming, and, you know, you could start to see a light at the end of the tunnel here with the Sabres as bad as they are on the ice, and I think he's actually sort of wrapping his mind around that and looking forward to it. But the one thing for sure, and I may me did not do a good enough job in my story of communicating this, but if there was any emotion in the interview, it really was him talking about he couldn't believe that people thought that he was dogging it by having the surgery and that he had the surgery out of convenience. He got pretty emotional during that. And I mean, not only did he need the surgery, when they got in and saw the shoulder on Saturday, and I confirmed this with other sources, they found another hole in there that they didn't even see in the original MRI. And so he was, I mean, that shoulder was really screwed up. And 2 games before the famous no-show in Vancouver, his shoulder popped up twice in the third period of a game in Philly. So I think that's what he really is upset about, is anyone suggesting that he was, you know, that he could have just played through.
That's what he was trying to do.
Well, he was for a long time, yeah. I mean, he played with a bum shoulder all year, actually. It just kept getting worse. Now, as for the other stuff, I mean, of course, you know, I asked him about the Bufflin and the tracksuit and, you know, how his teammates feel about him, and he kind of fluffed that off. And so take that for what you will, you know, whether maybe he still needs to recognize where there needs to be some, you know, maybe some growing up there. But I will say this, I mean, I know a lot of people have thrown this kid under the bus, but I sensed a lot of emotion and sincerity in some of his comments, and I think Buffalo is going to get a pretty motivated player next year.
Yeah, we're going to pick up on something Gary Lawless said to Knuckles Nylund on Off the Cuff yesterday along those lines, the character issue, in just a couple of minutes. To finish up with Pierre LeBrun tonight, we touched on that article in the Globe and Mail. Realistically, I mean, and Mitch or Rod kind of alluded to it in terms of Joffrey Leupold, what can the Leafs do prior to or at the deadline to begin this process? How much can they do?
I think they can do a lot more in June than they can do now. I mean, obviously they'll move all the rentals. I mean, Santarelli and Franz and Booth, if there's an interest in him and Winnick. And then, you know, they'll listen on other guys like Bozak and Leupold for sure. And, I mean, listen, it'd be easier to say who they won't listen to than who they will. I mean, Panuff and Kessel are obviously available, but to generate the kind of market that it's going to take to do those kind of deals, especially Phaneuf and Kessel, I think while it's not impossible they move before March 2nd, I think it's very much more probable they move in June. And, you know, and as far as the story in the Globe today, a terrific column by Cathal Kelly, I would say this, that I think it'd be a much bigger story if Brendan Shanahan didn't get the blessing. Because let's face it, he got hired on this premise. He got hired on him having the vision to come in and fix this darn thing after 40 years. And so, you know, I think what needed to play out up to now is in his first year at the helm is just to make sure and have the evidence that, you know, this thing ain't working. And he's got that, and changes are a-coming.
Enjoy the games this weekend. Thank you, as always, Pierre. Do it again on Tuesday.
All right, guys. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.